Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 16th of April, 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market fell, the ASX 200 down by about a third of a percent. We'll have the details with David Lane from Ord Minnett in a few moments. We'll also find out what is keeping Australian directors up at night and what they think about AI in the workplace. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer, finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first to the Bureau of Statistics, which says Australia's unemployment rate remained at 4.3% in March, nearly 18,000 people found work. But many companies are now adjusting their operations to manage higher fuel costs. So will the jobless rate rise? And for the Reserve Bank, which is fighting inflation, what does it mean for interest rates? I spoke with HSBC Chief Economist Paul Bloxham to find out.
The jobs market figures for March were pretty steady. The unemployment rate was steady at 4.3%. We created 18,000 jobs in the month, and they were pretty much in line with expectations. But the thing that I would probably emphasise is this survey was taken in the first part of March. And since then, we've had this sharp decline in consumer sentiment and sharp decline in business confidence. So we've been describing this sort of the calm before the storm. You know, the numbers don't really reflect all of the negative news we've seen from offshore that's flowed through to other indicators so far. So steady, a fully employed economy, an unemployment rate that's steady. It's good news in that sense, but I think it's going to be short-lived. I think we're going to see some weakening in the labour market coming up in coming months.
Yeah, so when you look ahead, we already know that the likes of Qantas and Virgin, for example, are having to cancel some flights and change routes, which may mean job cuts, right, though. If that kind of happens across the board, obviously the jobs market will be a bit of a concern. What are forward-looking indicators saying about where the jobs market is going, and is it fair to assume the unemployment rate will rise?
So it's very early days. This is the challenge. I mean, the Middle East conflict only started just over 6 weeks ago, and its effects have been very rapid in terms of the impact they've had on fuel costs and other issues as well in regard to sentiment. So there isn't that much economic information we have. What we do have is these indicators like consumer sentiment and business confidence that have fallen quite sharply. We've got one indicator in the consumer sentiment survey that asks households how they feel about their employment prospects. And a lot of them are starting to get more worried about unemployment potentially rising. So most of it is sort of framing what we've seen and how it's going to flow through. We think that the hit we've seen to disposable incomes from higher interest rates and the sharp rise in fuel costs will see the consumer pull back, and that will cascade into a slowdown in growth. And then that will, over in the next few months, start to weaken employment as well, in some of the ways that you've just described. But I think, you know, across the board, we think the unemployment rate will rise from here.
So there's the challenge for the Reserve Bank, though. It's trying to lower inflation, and it does that by lifting interest rates. But then there's pressure on the jobs market. So what does this mean about the balancing act that the RBA has to manage?
I think the RBA is in a very tricky spot at the moment because, as you say, it's got a dual mandate. Its objective is to get inflation back to 2.5%, and it's already well above that even before we take into account the big rise in fuel prices that's set to come through. And at the same time, it's got an objective to try and keep the economy close to full employment. And so it's going to be very difficult to achieve both those things. Inflation is going to go up in the short run. And so we think the RBA is going to likely prioritize trying to make sure that inflation doesn't get embedded and high inflation doesn't stick around. So we do think they'll probably lift interest rates in May. But as soon as they see some clear signs that the labour market, the jobs market is starting to tip into a proper downturn, we think that's about the point where they'll be very reluctant to want to lift interest rates further. So I think we should expect that the RBA is going to deliver another rate rise in May. But I think after that, if the economy does play out the way we expect, which is the unemployment rate starts rising and growth weakens, we may not get too many more rate rises from there.
But if growth weakens and we've got inflation still high, does it mean it's too early to talk about stagflation and what would that mean for the economy?
Well, so stagflation is a phrase, and if you think about it, it means stagnation in the economy, i.e. no growth or growth going backwards at the same time as you've got high inflation. And it's certainly the case that in the short run, we're thinking growth will, or GDP will fall, and we think inflation will rise further. But I think stagflation as a phrase tends to refer to the period in the 1970s when we had a sustained period of low growth, higher unemployment and high inflation. And so if the RBA can find its way through this in terms of the way it sets policy appropriately, we should avoid stagflation. But it is certainly a stagflationary shock. You know, the idea that inflation's going up at the same time that growth is weakening. And this is the sort of typical thing that happens when you get what's called a negative supply shock to your economy. And that's what we're talking about. You know, we can't get the things we need. Fuel costs have gone up. Fertilizer costs have gone up and some of it's not available. There's a whole range of things that come out of the Middle East that have been constrained on the supply side. And that's going to slow growth and lift inflation. Not a great combination and a pretty tricky spot for the RBA to be in.
That's the chief economist at HSBC, Paul Bloxham. To the Australian share market now, which did fall, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.3% to 8,955. That's despite the S&P 500 and NASDAQ in the US hitting record highs overnight. The banks led the declines here, CBA down 2.8%. Energy producers like Woodside and Santos also fell as the oil price declined to around $94. Viva Energy was placed in a trading halt following a fire at its Geelong refinery, but rival Ampol rose 0.2%. Tech stocks did spectacularly well today, WiseTech surging 13%, 0.9% higher. To tell us more about that, I spoke with David Lane. He's a senior private wealth advisor at Ord Minnett. David, so the Australian share market is easing today, but we're only still a few percentage points away from a record despite all this global uncertainty. We've seen markets in the US, though, hit a record, namely the S&P 500 and the technology-based NASDAQ. So how would you describe investor sentiment at the moment? And are they perhaps becoming a bit too optimistic?
Well, yes, I do think that they are. It's quite puzzling, really, that we've seen the return to risk over the last week or so, that the issues in Iran are obviously not yet totally resolved. And from an economic perspective, we're still fighting the issues of inflation, the potential of consumer sentiment being lower and the issues not only in Australia, but globally that is creating. So yes, I am a little bit perplexed as to this risk-on attitude that we've seen, not only in the US, as you said, the technology stocks have really rocketed in the last week. And, yeah, they seem to be returning to favour. We've also seen in Australia the technology stocks have started to turn around as well. And generally there seems to be quite a bit of optimism, but, yeah, I'm not necessarily convinced that it should be there at this point.
Are we seeing any signs yet that companies of how the war and higher energy prices are starting to impact their bottom line?
Yes, well, we've seen announcements this week from both Qantas and Virgin that they're battling with increasing costs as far as jet fuel is concerned. So both airlines have reduced the number of domestic flights that they've had, as well as obviously the impacts from the international transport. So certainly that's the first sign that we've seen. At this point in time, we haven't really seen too many other companies come out with major announcements downgrading, but I wouldn't be surprised if that comes, because the higher costs that we are seeing obviously has an impact on particularly the consumer discretionary sector. We start to make choices as to where we spend our money, and certainly the travel and consumer discretionary stocks are those that we're probably most concerned about.
One good news story, which hasn't really captured a lot of the headlines at the moment because of the war. China, its economy expanding 5% in the 3 months to March from a year-on-year basis. The government had earlier lowered its growth rate expectations, I think, to 4.5% to 5% annually. So surely at 5% in the face of what we're seeing in the world right now, this is good news, especially for Australia.
Yeah, it's certainly a more positive story coming out of China. China has had its issues, and we still think that it will continue to have issues over the medium to longer term. But certainly as far as Australia is concerned, it is a positive. They are our major trading partner. We're still seeing the iron ore price sitting above that $100 mark, currently sitting about 103. So that's been a benefit to the large iron ore producers, BHP, Rio, Fortescue, and also commodity prices in general have been fairly strong. So, yeah, we are seeing that materials sector in particular as being a beneficiary of that stronger activity in China.
All right, so finally, with the market at these near record levels, the war still providing some uncertainty in the global economy, the potential for interest rates to rise here in Australia. What are you telling your clients right now, and do you still see opportunities for investors?
Yeah, well, there certainly are opportunities, yes. We are still relatively cautious. We're cautious about the over-excitement that we've seen in the last week or two and that quick bounce back. But what we're seeing in the market is most of the money has actually been heading towards those large cap stocks. So not only that the Mag 7 stocks in the US, but also in Australia, the large caps have been where the money has gone. So there's still a big divergence between the valuations of large cap stocks and small cap stocks. So we're actually seeing probably most of the opportunities in those small to mid cap stocks that haven't necessarily rallied. Many of those companies still have better earnings expectations and the potential for growth over the next 12 to 18 months. So that's really where we're seeing a lot of the opportunity. The technology stocks, many of those in Australia, from our context, are actually small cap stocks. So we're still seeing some opportunities there, and think that the sell-off in a lot of those tech stocks has probably been overdone. They're looking better today, but you know, medium to longer term, we still think that there's some value in there.
That's David Lane there from Ord Minnett.
A new SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May.
On DAB Radio, online.
The SBS Audio app.
And SBS On Demand.
Now, a survey by more than 800 company directors around the country found 40% believe artificial intelligence will impact the size of their workforce. The study by the Australian Institute of Company Directors reveals two-thirds report AI tools have already delivered productivity benefits as many upgrade and upskill. Productivity growth overall remains the top issue directors want governments to address, both in the short and long term, as they seek progress in regulatory and compliance reform. For more, I spoke with Mark Thirlwell. He is the chief economist at the AICD. Mark, firstly, how were directors approaching the new year ahead of the war?
I think it's fair to say that they were approaching it pretty cautiously. If you think about domestic conditions, we had slow growth, lackluster productivity, inflation was too high, and the RBA was signaling that rate increases were on the agenda. So the domestic economic conditions were pretty tough. And if we look at our survey results, they're telling us that top of directors' worry list, the thing that was keeping them awake at night, was the state of the domestic economy. And then sort of on the horizon, or in fact, even closer than on the horizon, was that sense that the international economic environment was increasingly challenging too. If you think back to January, we had the exercise of the Donro Doctrine in Venezuela. We had the stoush with NATO over Greenland. We'd already seen unrest in Iran and speculation about the possibility of US military intervention. And we asked directors about this, about one in four said that the international economic environment was already encouraging them to pare back a little bit on investment plans. And then a second question, we were sort of testing about the impact of US economic diplomacy, and more than half were saying that they had concerns about what that might mean for Australian trade flows, for example. Close to half were worried about the implications for supply chains. So there was already, I think, a sense of nervousness.
To what extent has the war changed that or exacerbated those concerns?
I think it's reinforced them, exacerbated them, and injected a whole additional dose of uncertainty. So we are in a situation where we've now had the third major supply shock in less than a decade. Remember, we had COVID in the pandemic, we had the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and now we've got war in the Gulf. So there's this reminder that the external environment can come along and swipe you, and swipe you quite viciously. We already know that growth is going to be lower, inflation is going to be higher, interest rates are probably going to be higher unless growth gets really low, in which case they'll be going down, but that won't be good news because it'll be fighting off a recession risk. Uncertainty is even more elevated. Everybody's playing a guessing game about how long the disruption will go. And then there are the tail risks around physical disruption in terms of what happens if we actually start to physically run out of energy supplies. What does that do to the logistics and supply chains? So the worry list, if you like, has expanded and lengthened. And then I think sitting behind that, there's also this sense of we knew that the Australian economic model was facing challenges. And there's been a little bit of a reluctance to accept that in part just because we were such an unambiguous winner of the old global economic environment. You know, and now that cracks in that have started to appear and expand, we're having to grapple with the fact that the world's changed around us. And this sequence of shocks, of which this one's the most recent, is telling us, look, that old order really has gone. Things really are different now, and we're going to have to adapt.
While, as you mentioned, economic conditions is the number one issue keeping directors up at night, productivity growth remains the top issue directors want governments to address. As we lead into the federal budget, what's the message, do you think, to the government?
So I think that, so first of all, you're right. Our survey told us that right at the top of policy priorities for the government, both in the short term and in the medium term, was productivity growth. And I think in the current context, that both reinforces that message, but also slightly complicates it. It reinforces it because it's hard to imagine having a successful and resilient economy in the absence of productivity growth. If you're struggling to raise your economic speed limit, if you're slow and sluggish, then you're not by definition going to be particularly resilient. So in a sense, the message gets reinforced by where we're at. But the complicating factors are, of course, that the government, as it approaches the budget, is now having to juggle multiple balls. So it's got all of those issues that were on the table before the conflict started to unfold. Plus, it's now got the challenges around fuel and energy security. It's got to balance what it does in terms of, on the one hand, restoring fiscal sustainability. On the other hand, providing a cushion, depending on the ultimate size of the shock. So it complicates the decisions to some extent. I mean, that said, if you think about the message coming through from our survey, I think what directors are saying, there's a couple of clear points. I mean, the first one is for several years now, the message has been coming through that the regulatory and compliance burden has just become so heavy, so excessive on business that they're struggling to operate and deliver under those circumstances. And I think there's a recognition on the part of government, if you've looked at some of the things that they've done recently, there's an acceptance that there is a challenge, there is a problem there. So more progress on that, I think, is something to look at. And then the second one is this sense that as you head into a period of crisis, as you head into a shock, and we've had the COVID experience too, what you want is a coordinated national response. You don't want sort of too much ad hocery. You don't want states heading off in different directions, for example. So I think the message is, you know, don't abandon the lessons that we've learned in terms of the need for productivity change over the last couple of years just because the crisis is there, while recognizing that the constraints the crisis will impose, but also learning the lessons from the experience of, for example, COVID in terms of how you manage that.
And I guess these days you can't talk productivity without talking about artificial intelligence. How are directors using AI and how do they see it impacting their companies?
This was an interesting one. So you're right. I mean, for the productivity story, there's a lot of hope that AI is the silver bullet for that. And there was some cautious optimism, I think, there. I mean, first of all, It's very clear that AI is being rolled out across Australian businesses. More than 8 in 10 of directors were saying that over the coming year, they expect more AI and digital work to be part of their organization. And when you look at the implications or the impact of that, a clear majority, more than 60%, said they're seeing a positive impact on performance and productivity. About 50% are seeing some impact, so it's pretty modest initially, but there's 12% saying that it's already significant. So there's signs that we will get a productivity payout from that. When we ask directors the particular view that they have from the boardroom, it's quite interesting. So one message is that many more are optimistic that the benefits will outweigh the costs, but they're also cautious because of the speed at which this is unraveling, that the pace is something that maybe that some of their organizations are struggling to match with. So there's that sort of balance there. There's, yes, there's an opportunity here, but there's also the sense that we need to control and manage how we do it and need to make sure that we're keeping pace with the change. In terms of the implications for the labor market, again, it's a nuanced message. In terms of, for example, on the demand for skill, we've got a really strong response saying that, you know, more than 70% of our respondents was telling us that the change of skill mix in organizations is going to be required over the coming year to respond to the AI story. On the other hand, it's a much lower share that are seeing changes in the absolute size of the workforce. Now, again, this is a time-bounded answer. It's only for the next 12 months. But we're not seeing in our numbers some of the scare stories around that this implies are big losses in employment, for example. It seems to be more about upgrading, upskilling, and changing the nature of work rather than it is about changing the number of employees.
It's Mark Thirlwall there, the Chief Economist at the Australian Institute of Company Directors, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Give it a like, review, and subscribe if you enjoy it. And don't forget, you can watch On the Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
SBS Music Station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May
on DAB Radio, online,
the SBS Audio app
and SBS On Demand.